Matthew tells us of the Saviour's birth in Bethlehem and the visit of the wise men, the Magi. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who had been born king of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all of Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teacher of the law, he asked them where the Christ was to be born. "In Bethlehem, in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people Israel."
Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and of incense and of myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Well, good evening. Thank you very much for coming. It's lovely to see you all here this evening. I'm not actually going to focus on the reading that May just gave us. I'm going to go for one, just the one before that, that Abby and Lara read, and that's from Matthew chapter 2. And the words are going to come up on the screen, I hope. I wonder if you realize that predicting the future is always quite a tricky business. I don't know whether you've invested time in trying to do that, but it's always easy to see patterns in retrospect rather than before. Although, looking back over the last 6 years, I think you would agree that we've been through quite a rocky time in this part of the world. In fact, perhaps the whole world has. But I guess looking back, we could perhaps have predicted that things were not going to be completely straightforward. After all, just 6 years ago, there was a vote to name the Antarctic research ship, and we all know where that went, to Boaty McBoatface. I guess we should have known we were in for a rocky time after that. And sure enough, we've had 5 prime ministers in 6 years. I mean, we could have seen it coming. But perhaps sometimes the most surprising people have been proved right in their predictions. And we see that these Magi, these ancient star watchers from Persia, are a case in point. Now, of course, astrologers aren't always that reliable. In fact, they don't have a very good reputation at all for predicting the future. I don't know whether you remember the Grand Warlock of Mexico. Have you come across him? A chap called Antonio Vazquez, who predicted that Obama would lose in 2012 and Hillary Clinton would win in 2016. So that didn't go so well. But the chaps in our chapter are a very different matter. Because according to Matthew, the one who wrote this account of Jesus' birth, none of these events could possibly have happened without God being at work and God guiding these astrologers. And look what the Magi needed to get to and from this baby safely. In verse 2, it was a star. In verses 5 and 6, it was a prophetic prophecy. And then at the end, in verse 12, it was a dream. Quite extraordinary things. All to announce a king. God's king. Does that seem far-fetched? Is that ridiculous? Well, maybe. And we know, don't we, that in troubled times, people do clutch at straws, don't they? So perhaps this is a case in point. Now, people debate the nature of this celestial event. Perhaps it was a comet or a planetary alignment or a supernova. I don't understand these kinds of things. It's sort of all science, and I don't really do science. But each of these apparently is consistent with events in those final years of King Herod's life. So who knows? What matters is that this celestial event got these stargazers to Judea on time. And I think we're meant to be impressed by that. But what is interesting is that Matthew almost just sort of throws it away. He treats it almost as incidental. Now, funnily enough, we've just sung. I noticed in the carol we just sung, it's quite common to think that there are three magi. I bet you thought there were three magi, didn't you? We're never actually told, for all we know. I mean, we're told here that there were three gifts. That's true. But there could have been 23 magi who clubbed together and just bought three gifts. We don't know. But finally, whoever and how many there were, they reached Jerusalem, and they ask in verse 2, "Where's the one who's been born king of the Jews? We saw his star in the east. We've come to worship him." Now that rang alarm bells. A rival claimant to Herod's throne. Now, in times of absolute rulers, that is perilous. But notice the response and what people did. You see, it got them all checking the Bible to see what these astrologers were on about. And sure enough, there is plenty in the Bible to get them thinking, like the prophet Micah. Lizzie read to us from that passage earlier. It's actually quoted in our passage in Matthew 2. But then we read in verse 9, "After they'd heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they'd seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. And when they saw the star, they were overjoyed." The pieces of the puzzle were coming together in a Bethlehem cowshed. I mean, that is quite a surprising place for a king to be found, let alone born. But don't imagine it's because God couldn't find anywhere else. No, it's exactly as God planned it. This was the idea. But why? Why the star, the prophecies, the journeys, the big disturbances? I mean, if God goes to so much trouble, something pretty big must be going on, don't you think? Well, Matthew focuses us on one key idea. It comes three times, in fact, in verse 2, verse 8, and verse 11. And it's this little word, worship. But a baby? Worshipping a baby? Well, yes. Because as Micah predicted back in the Old Testament, he would grow up to be the ruler of Judah who would shepherd God's people, Israel. But what on earth is God doing using pagan astrologers in the first place? Well, you see, this king, Jesus, is not just Judah's king. He is the king of the world's king, the king of the cosmos. He's the divine king. You see, you don't worship human beings. That is completely out of order. But you do worship God, especially if God comes to earth. But seriously? I mean, you can't believe that rubbish, can you? When Yuri Gagarin was the first man in space, apparently back on Earth, it was claimed that he'd said in a press conference that he looked, and when he was up in space, he couldn't see God. But actually, history tells us that he said no such thing. Despite the times of communism, actually Gagarin went regularly to his Orthodox church. That's not something that everybody knew. But it was Khrushchev, the premier, who put those words into his mouth because it didn't suit the communist regime that there would be a God. But anyway, it's a pretty crude idea, isn't it? So when asked if you've seen God, a friend used to say that actually the right answer is, in answer to that question, well, no. but I would have done if I'd lived in Jerusalem 2,000 years ago. Because God walked this earth. He got his feet muddy in the River Jordan. He was born into a cowshed in Bethlehem. God was born. Now, you see, that is the Christian claim. That is what Christmas is all about. And yes, people still believe this. And I still believe this. When you visit a monarch, it is customary, just so that you know, it is customary to bring gifts. And this has always been the case. And so, sure enough, visiting a king, they bring gifts, these magi, all 23 of them. Now, they bring gold, incense, and myrrh. And Matthew doesn't tell us what they mean. All kinds of speculations since then have been given. They may or may not be true. The very least we can say is that these are costly things. And they reflect God's costly gift of himself. Napoleon once said, "If Socrates was to enter the room, we should rise and do him honor. But if Jesus Christ came to the room, we should fall down on our knees and worship him." And that's what these astrologers did. When they found this baby. But isn't it amazing that these ancient hippie stargazers are the very first people in the New Testament to do this. To worship this infant. Now, I'm not claiming the reliability of astrology. I'm only saying that this time God used that. And so often God does surprising things. Just shake us up. But here God moves heaven and earth literally to announce his king. Which makes the response of the Jerusalem crowd particularly grim, doesn't it? Because you see, the religious and political establishments cannot handle it. They don't want a bit of it. In fact, they want him dead. And around 30 years later or so, they get their wish. But that was God's plan all along. It's hard to understand, isn't it, how all these pieces fit together, how God could possibly want it to be like this. I don't know whether you've spent much time investigating medieval tapestries. I don't know any experts here, people who do that for a living. Maybe you can come and tell me afterwards. But basically, if you've ever looked at a tapestry, that they're amazing things. It's incredible what detail and sort of nuance you can get with a needle and thread. But if you turn them round and look at the back, it's a completely horrible mess. Odd strands, random colours, total chaos. You can't make it out at all. And if that's what you were presented with at first, you wouldn't have a clue what the picture was. It's impossible to tell. Well, I think our world is a bit like that. It certainly feels like that, doesn't it? We can only see the back, with little clue of what the big picture is on the front. Well, it's as if Matthew is just giving us a glimpse of the tapestry turned round right so that we can see the front. That despite troubled times, there really is a pattern and there really is a king, a divine king, deliberately born right at the bottom of the social pile. An illegitimate refugee pauper born in a Roman backwater in a shed. Who would rule the world forever for good in love? Makes your head spin, doesn't it? But that's no fairy story. That's at least the claim. This is not a fairy story. This, in Matthew's words, is an appeal for worship. Dismiss it as the fantasies of ancient stargazers and hippies, if you like. Say it's not what sensible, rational people could possibly believe in this day and age. But remember, establishments can be wrong. They can be very wrong. And if Jesus is who he claimed to be, then it is not the kind of decision to be trifled with, even this Christmas, perhaps especially this Christmas. Find out, excuse me, ask questions, talk to friends, and read the accounts. Oh, an ever-present help in trouble. My wife. Ask questions. Read the accounts for yourself. We've got copies of Luke's gospel, not Matthew's, but Luke's, available afterwards. Take that home. We'd love you to take it and read it for yourself. Talk to friends. This is serious. If it's true, and you have nothing to lose by doing that, and potentially everything to gain.